Welcome to Sport Management Review Insights. I'm your host, Vito Sobral. The supporters of sport teams are key stakeholders, and in recent times, there's been a push for them to have a greater say in the team's management. So in this episode, we're going to consider the role and performance of the supporters appointed as directors of sport teams. And joining us to discuss this is the star of the episode on power and rent seeking on sport boards. He's a lecturer in sport management at Deakin University. It's Josh McLeod. Welcome back, Josh.
It's great to be back, Victor. Thank you for inviting me again.
It's an absolute pleasure to invite you. You published in Sport Management Review. You deserve the podcast. But also, it's great to see you because I know it was tough watching Scotland at the Euro. So much hope. And unfortunately, they came home too soon. So I apologize for that. And it's great that you've recovered and you're able to do this.
Well, not only did I have to watch my team exit the tournament, I had to have my sleeping pattern ruined as well.
Josh and co-authors Andrew Jenkin, Jeff Walters and Richard Irving recently published The Role and Performance of Supporter Directors, a Social Exchange Theory Perspective. Josh's stakeholder representation is something that's been given some consideration previously, but how did this research help our understanding of the area?
Sure. So you gave a good description there, Vitor, about what these individuals do. But just to recap that, supporter representation is a form of stakeholder representation on boards. You know, there are people elected to those boards of those sport clubs to represent the interests of those supporters. This is something that's really common in European football and in Scotland especially. But we do see other forms of it in sport too. So athlete representation is quite widely used in the US, for instance. That's another form of stakeholder representation. Stakeholder representation generally has its limitations under certain types of ownership models. And I think those limitations stem from the fact that stakeholder representatives on boards have to balance the interests of two different groups. Firstly, they have the interests of the group that they have been elected to represent. So with regards to supporter directors, that's the group of supporters. But they also have the interests of the organisation that they sit on the board of. So in this context, it is the football clubs. And the trouble is, the interest of those two groups is often actually not aligned. And that puts the supporter directors in quite a challenging situation. So to come back to the question of what this research did to help our understanding of this area, we were particularly interested in finding out how these supporter directors can perform better, bearing in mind that they have this challenging role. And from previous research that we had done on the Scottish football context, it was clear to us that there is real big issues with how supporter directors operate in Scotland. So we wanted to find out how can these people do their job better. And we took a social exchange theory lens to do that. And what we also argue in the paper is that the learnings from our research are useful for supporter directors, but actually they're probably quite useful to other types of stakeholder representatives too, and that includes athlete representatives. So that's the key way in which we try to develop understandings of the area, which is to find out how can they actually do their jobs better.
I can see how this is really important research to advance that understanding. And I've seen that trend of more supporters appearing on boards. And I can imagine, like you said, there must be so much pressure on them to get things done because every supporter is going, you need to fix things. But how did you come to see this as an important research topic?
I can tell you a story about that, actually. And we need to go back to my doctoral studies, which looked at governance issues in Scottish football, a few different kinds of governance issues. At that time, though, supporter directors were not on my radar as something that I should be looking at. But something interesting happened when I started to gather my data. I remember doing a research interview with a club director one morning, and he said to me, while we're on this topic of governance, you really need to look into these supporter directors. It's a big challenge for us. And we don't know how to make this work. You know, there was a lot of problems for them at the time. To be honest, that largely went over my head at the time. But later that day, I was doing another research interview with a director of a different club. And he said, oh, by the way, you should really look into these supporter directors because it's a big problem. Then I became aware that this is something that affects Scottish football clubs. And it wasn't until the next week where I was doing another research interview, and lo and behold, the same thing happened. And a lot tends to go by me, Vitor, but even this was too obvious that it's something that I should be trying to investigate at some point. So it came about, the importance of this topic to me really came about by just being exposed to practice, not by reading journals. And I think there's probably a lot to be said about that approach, because you get to what is actually really important for people in sport organisations.
It hit you in the face three times. So yeah, you got to accept that. No, I can see where you're coming from though, because when you're doing your research, really focused on that area you're doing. And I think it's great that you've gone, hang on, there's something else here, and you keep it in your back pocket for the future. And to do this research, like you mentioned, you use social exchange theory as your framework. Can you just tell us a bit more about what that means and why that was useful in this study?
Bear in mind, again, the question was, you know, how can we make this model of supporter representation work better, right? Because clearly there are problems in some organisation. People actually debate whether having supporter directors on a board in the first place is something that should happen. And that might be a worthwhile question for people to look at. I didn't focus on that. I started with the position that we have supporter representation. How can we make it better? And from the conversations I was having with people on club boards and supporter directors themselves, I knew that this was a social issue, this question. At the heart of this, it was a social issue. It was a lack of trust with the other directors on the board. It was a lack of buy-in in terms of people thinking that they actually had a place there or should have a place there. And so what needed to be addressed to make supporter representation work better, and again, this was coming from the horse's mouth, this is coming from the people who were directly involved. They said, you know, this is purely about trying to improve the social dynamic, because this is where it's breaking down. It's about trust. And so social exchange theory was actually really useful. I've been able to analyze this problem, because social exchange theory is essentially about, and I'll try and simplify it a bit for the purposes of this podcast, the quality of people's interactions and relationships, including whether they have trust, is dependent on how people rationalize the costs and benefits of actually engaging with someone. And if you think about how that was applied to supporter directors, they weren't working well, they weren't having influence, they didn't have a platform to promote their group's interests because people didn't trust them. People didn't see the value of interacting with them. And so social exchange theory explains that quite well as a psychological cost-benefit analysis that people are going through. And that really got at the heart and helped me explain what the problem is and how you can solve it based on the perceptions of supporter directors themselves.
Case study you used in this research was Scottish football clubs, 17 semi-structured interviews of supporter directors. I assume three were pretty easy to get because the clubs were saying, hey, come and research this. Why was that a good approach to collect the data for this study? Why interviews with the actual supporter directors?
The qualitative approach was really quite important, I think, because it allowed us to get a deep insight into what the key people connected to this issue thought about it, what they thought about the challenges, and what they thought about the solutions. So we got a rich, you know, understanding by spending a lot of time interviewing them and by exploring the actual process of their job. Now, this methodology is different from what has been used in the vast majority of other studies on stakeholder representation. Most of those studies in the broader stakeholder representation literature focus on worker representatives of organizations. And what they tend to do is they'll quantitatively assess the impact that their presence has on organizational efficiency, organizational performance outcomes like financial performance. The results of those studies have broadly been mixed, right? So there's no clear understanding of whether having them there is great or having them there is not great. And that makes sense because the whole thing is complex. And what it suggests is the process is complex and you need to spend a bit of time trying to work out what it is that makes it work well in some situations and what it is that makes it work not so well in other situations. And so this qualitative methodology is really the key to allowing you to do that. And it allows you to really explore the social dynamics that mean that in some situations it works well, in some situations it doesn't. And that's what was really needed in the context of just Scottish football. But again, the implications of this research are actually relevant. We argue in the paper to athlete representatives, to worker directors in the corporate world, and so on.
That deeper understanding really does make a lot of sense here. And of course, you can get more on qualitative research methods in the podcast with Lorena Haber as well, which explains so much about why this approach is also very useful. Now, considering this was relatively new research in the area, how did you go about analyzing the data?
Yeah, again, this was an extensive process. Qualitative analysis usually is. I specifically drew on template analysis, which is Nigel King's approach. What actually made it easier is that we knew what the theoretical perspective was that we wanted to explore in relation to our data, and that was social exchange theory. So it was a somewhat deductive form of qualitative analysis. So that it was nice to be able to just have our theory in mind and then explore that in relation to our data. Now, obviously, you need to stay open to themes arising, but generally, that gives you a good framework in which to explore the issues. And so that certainly helps to speed up the analytical process. Still, definitely very time consuming.
Based on the extensive analysis that you went through, what were the key findings?
The main insights is that the solutions to the challenges that supporters, directors face, and as I said, we had a bit of an insight to this before we even started the study, is social. And again, I would qualify that by saying the study was limited to the perspective of supporter directors themselves. I do wonder, and this might be an interesting question for people to explore, what is it that actual other directors on the board think about these issues? So we looked at the perspective of supporter directors themselves, but the solutions according to these people were that for it to work well, you need to get the social dynamic right. It's not about changing structures. It's not about having more processes or policies. It's all about the social dynamic. And that is what all of them said consistently. I've never had a qualitative data set before that was so consistent in terms of what the people were saying. And this is 17 different individuals who have been in these roles. And when you ask them, okay, you have these problems, but how do you do it better? They're also consistent in what they were saying. You need to build trust. You need to build buy-in. And if you want to be able to promote your group's interests in the boardroom, you need to achieve these things. Now, it's not revolutionary insight to say that having trust and buy-in is going to be helpful, right? That's helpful in pretty much every situation. But the importance of these things seem to be supercharged in this context. And the supporter directors I spoke to, they helped to build trust and buy-in for themselves by adopting a number of different strategies. So the main ones that I talk about in the paper is firstly, they would try to provide in quite a structured and methodical way, key insights to the board related to what the supporters thought. So almost like a market research role. And that went down so well with the other directors. They would get trust for that and buy-in for that, which allowed them then to influence decisions in a far greater way as opposed to being a token director. Also, they would do that by providing skills, whether that be legal expertise, financial expertise. And what was arguably the most important thing is that they would behave in a way that was diplomatic. And they said that that is just absolutely crucial in order for you to get the social dynamic you need to have the influence that you want to make decisions. Those were the key findings, all coming from the supporter directors themselves. People who were either currently in the role or who had been in the role before and recently retired.
It makes a lot of sense too to be diplomatic, because you can just imagine some of the supporters who, you know, they're full of passion and they want to improve the club, and they might start telling everyone, you know, you're an idiot and you don't know what you're doing and you don't know about fans and all that stuff. Now, from a theoretical perspective, what does this all mean? How did this advance our understanding of social exchange theory?
In terms of the theoretical contribution that we put forward in this paper, the theory is actually already developed quite well, and it's been around for a long time. But in our findings, we were able to show that reciprocal social exchange patterns were useful not just for building trust, but actually for building buy-in too. And we distinguish between those two concepts quite clearly in the paper, between what buy-in means for your relationship and what trust means for your relationship. So by focusing on both of those things, that was actually quite different to what other studies that we had read that had used social exchange theory, where they mainly just focused on how through reciprocal social exchange patterns, you can build trust. But actually this idea of creating buy-in as well, which is a distinct concept, is achievable and very helpful through social exchange. So I wouldn't say it was paradigm shifting theoretical stuff, but it was an interesting perspective as well, and definitely something different from what has come before.
Now, based on this study, what advice would you give to sport organizations, supporter directors, but also, like you said, other stakeholders who are included, like athlete representatives and other people in similar positions?
This is a key question, really, because ultimately this research, unlike some of the other research that I have done, perhaps, but I'm sure other people as well, it can be hard to ensure that your focus is really practice orientated. And that's what I liked about this paper. It was very practice orientated. How can we help you do your job better? Clearly you have problems. And so the supporter directors that, again, that I said I spoke to, some of them were successful and some of them were not. And the successful ones tended to use a number of strategies to increase their influence. And this goes back to a bit what we were saying earlier, which is ultimately what they want to do. You know, that's their objective. They want to be able to put forward their views and their agenda, and for that to be considered as carefully as possible by the owner and the other directors. The way in which to do that, according to our interviewees, was providing those professional skills in a useful and deliberate way, having a structured form of information sharing, and again, being quite clever in how you do that, and then the diplomatic behaviours, which were just absolutely crucial. You know, doing those three things in the context of supporter directors in Scottish football was shown to be really, really effective for them ultimately improving their performance. And when you think about that, diplomacy, offering skills, information sharing, you know, those are the types of things that will be equally as applicable to athlete representatives, worker directors, etc. And so I think there's another key consideration in this, which again, we discussed a bit in the paper, and that was supporters' trusts. Now, again, people not from the UK might not know what that means. A supporters' trust is essentially a group of supporters who come together, and their group is different from other types of supporter groups in that one of their objectives is to have a role in the governance of football clubs. And this is usually in the UK. So supporter trusts, this research has some interesting insights for that body too, because if you think about what the aim of the supporters trust is to increase their influence in governance. And usually the supporter directors are appointed and elected through the supporters trust. So when they are creating and thinking about the process of their elections for these people, think about what the people who you ultimately elect need in order to perform well in the boardroom. Let's not put up a radical. Let's put up someone who is diplomatic. And sometimes, you know, this happens in Scottish football clubs. The radicals are often the people who might have a lot of popularity for a whole different host of reasons. And yes, that person might go into the boardroom like a bull in a china shop and really promote your agenda, but that's probably not going to help you achieve your outcomes. You need someone who's going to be diplomatic. You need someone who can see both sides and communicate properly, because otherwise it's not going to end well. And that doesn't mean to say that you just roll over either. Of course you don't do that, but there is a lot to be said about the need for diplomacy. And thinking about when supporters trusts are thinking about the criteria for elections, they take some of these types of things into account. I do think that supporter directors have one of the most difficult jobs in football. Now, it's certainly not a job that I would want, having to represent the interests of Scottish football fans, who, as we know, are extremely passionate. You know, there's no pleasing the vast majority of them. So it's a really difficult role when you do need to think carefully about who takes up this position as a supporter director. There's some interesting quotes that I put in, not just the SMR paper, but an earlier paper I published on this as well. It's just really illuminating insights into what it's like to be a supporter director. Some of them say they absolutely hated it and had to get out after 2 years. They've never been so happy to lose an election after that, or they just didn't stand, because it's really, really tough. You know, as I said, you can't please everyone. The board don't trust you because they see you often as a mole who's going to tell the fans everything. The fans, you can't please them, and they probably don't trust you either. So who agrees to do this on a voluntary basis? You know, you need to be a special kind of person. And that most of the ones I spoke to were actually really impressive as well. And they would have a natural ability to do it well. But there is ways that you can improve the way in which you can perform in these roles to the diplomacy, the strategies for information sharing and provision of skills, you know, are key to that.
Yeah, easy task then. Find that person, no problem. But look, the selection of the representative seems so important from what you say. I was thinking that the whole way through. This is a pretty special type of person. You can't, as I assume would happen in many cases, just pick the most passionate fan who's going to go in there and fight, because ultimately he needs other skills too. So that makes a lot of sense. Hopefully that advice gets taken on board and we see a lot more of that happening throughout, not just football clubs, of course, throughout sport organizations. Josh, as ever, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And it sounds like there's a bit more research here as well. You've mentioned that there's other aspects that you can look at.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully we'll get a chance to do that, if not this year, at some point next year.
So look out for that. But Josh, absolute pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Vitor.
And thanks for listening to Sport Management Review Insights. Head to the Sport Management Review website to check out all the latest research that's being published, including the article discussed in this episode, The Role and Performance of Supporter Directors, A Social Exchange Theory Perspective. That's it for this episode, but of course, there are many more you can listen to on your favorite podcast player. And if you could follow the podcast and give us a 5-star rating, that'd be great too. Until next time, it's bye for now.